welcome to part one of Midland National's quarterly audio series on characteristics of greatness. This is Jerry Blair, the Chief Distribution Officer at Midland National Life Insurance Company. It's a goal of ours to make sure that you know you aren't just a member of the Champions Club, you are part of a Midland National family that cares about you as well as your personal and professional development. To prove it to you, we've enlisted the help of 8-time New York Times bestselling author and acclaimed speaker Don Yeager. Through exclusive conversations with some of the greatest athletes and sports minds of all time, Don has identified 16 characteristics that help take a person from good to great. I'm excited to have him share with you some of these amazing stories that are sure to inspire, enrich, alter, or in some cases provide clarity in your life. As a benefit to you, please know that the lessons provided in this audio CD have enriched the quality of work in both individual and team environments. It has also unlocked the keys to success for companies worldwide. I'm confident it can have the same impact for you. Thank you again for taking the time to incorporate this into your listening library. Now I'd like to officially introduce my friend, Don Yeager. But to do so properly, I get to have a little help from great winners like Shaquille O'Neal, Landon Donovan, Michael Orr, Tony Siragusa, Bob Costas, Dick Vitale, and the late, great John Wooden. It's quite the introduction. Let's see if you can pick out the various voices.
Treat today.
Your speaker today, Don Yeager, is known in the sports world
as one of the most respected and nationally acclaimed writers in our country.
Don Yeager is the author of more than a dozen books,
including 8 New York Times bestsellers.
Don's books, including the one he wrote with me, have sold more than 2 million copies and have been translated into more than a dozen languages.
Don began his career at a newspaper in Texas
and rose to become associate editor of Sports Illustrated magazine, and that's how I met him.
Hey, few people can really experience the kind of exciting resume that Don has had. He's a PTP-er, baby.
In his 25 years as a journalist, Don has worked with some of the greatest champions of our time. Michael Jordan, Mia Hamm, Serena Williams, and me.
He's been a guest on just about every major national television show, from Nightline to Good Morning America to Oprah.
This is Don Yeager, who did that article I was telling you about that's in Sports Illustrated on newsstands now. You should really get it if you're a parent who has a child who's in sports.
He lived with my father, Walter Payton, writing his autobiography while Dad courageously battled cancer.
He even met with the President of the United States in the Oval Office.
Using lessons learned from the world of sports,
Don shares the formulas he's seen in the great winners he's worked with.
And explains how that formula can work for each of us.
As I said, you're in for a real treat.
He's awesome, baby, with a capital A.
Now please welcome my friend.
My friend.
My friend.
Now please welcome my friend, Don Yeager.
Hi friends, this is Don Yeager, and I want to thank you for diving into this career-long pursuit of mine to truly identify the characteristics of greatness and what makes the great ones great. You know, we've all been blessed over the course of our lifetime, over the course of our careers, with moments that you'll never forget. Moments that, when someone gives you an opportunity and opens the door for you to share just a little bit about who you are, those are the moments you can't wait to offer. You get a chance, as Brittany Payton said in that introduction, you get a chance to live with her father, Walter Payton. Not just the greatest running back to have ever played professional football, but also one of the most extraordinary men to have ever lived on our planet. You get a chance to live with Walter Payton for the last few weeks of his life, and that's filled with some pretty extraordinary moments. You get an opportunity, as Hall of Fame golfer Annika Sorenstam said in that intro, to sit in the Oval Office with the President of the United States. It doesn't matter your politics. You sit one-on-one with the President. It's a pretty great moment. The moments over the course of my life as a nationally acclaimed leadership speaker, a writer for Sports Illustrated, and an author of more than 2 dozen books, 8 of which are New York Times bestsellers, have included the privilege of honest conversations and ongoing dialogues with some of the great winners, great leaders of all time. The lessons learned from these true champions have been distilled into 16 characteristics of greatness, with each consistent characteristic as an absolute lesson for me and now for you, in what allowed them to go from good to great and stay there. Characteristic number 1 is it's personal. I mentioned great moments you can't wait to share, but we all have at least one moment. Mine? is a story that I'll be sharing until they close my casket. It's a story that happened not too long ago with a man whose nickname to some was simply Air. Now, some of you might better know him by his real name, Michael Jordan. See, back in the day, he was a pretty good basketball player. Jordan does an event every year in Las Vegas in which he brings 100 old guys. It's doctors, lawyers, executives from all kinds of companies. The only thing that the 100 of us all have in common is that we love to play basketball. I actually love basketball so much, I live in Tallahassee, Florida, where I have a full court at my house, and guys play there several times a week. It's an awesome way for us guys over 40 to get our energy out. So Jordan invites 100 guys, divides us into teams of 10, and then he brings in 20 of the greatest coaches in the history of the game. We're talking about Mike Krzyzewski from Duke, Dean Smith, Roy Williams from North Carolina, John Thompson from Georgetown, Jim Boeheim from Syracuse, 20 amazing coaches, 19 of them are already in the Hall of Fame today. And over the course of 4 days, their job is to coach us. It's a pretty lousy deal for the coaches. The first 2 days, you get up and you play basketball all day long. It's awesome. And the truth is, you sit in the bar all night long, and you tell each other how great you used to be. And I don't know what it is, but the older you are, the greater you used to be. But then on day three, you're on the floor, you're laying there, stretching, trying to figure out if you have 8 more hours of basketball in those muscles, when Michael Jordan walks out. He says, today we're going to start with something a little different. You see, today, I'm going to give 20 of you the opportunity to go one-on-one with the greatest player of all time. How about being able to tap yourself on the chest, call yourself the greatest of all time, and have no one in the room argue with you? How awesome would that be? Jordan walks through, picks 20 of us out, tells us to stand in a line, and I happen to be one of the 20. As we were standing there, shaking in our Nikes, which is exactly the way Michael wanted it, Jordan said, "The rules today are very simple. In fact, they're so simple, I'm going to let my assistant explain them to you." Jordan's assistant steps up and she says, "Yes, the rules today are very simple. See, today, you're going to play a game to one. The first guy to score wins." And Michael Jordan starts with the ball. "Your job," she says, "is to guard Michael." She even uses her fingers to make air quotes as she says it. Quite patronizing, don't you think? "Your job is to guard Michael. If somehow Jordan doesn't score, you get the ball and Michael Jordan guards you." That time, Jordan steps back up and says, "While you all are thinking about this, I want you guys to know that in the 9 years I've done this little competition, 5 guys have ever scored on me. And today, there won't be a 6th. As if we weren't already nervous, now Jordan's getting in our heads. Well, the 5'8" guy who was in front of me went over to guard 6'6" Michael Jordan. In his attempt at defense, he went to throw his elbow into Jordan's chest, but he couldn't get that high. He was lucky to reach MJ's stomach. As it happened, he was locked on Jordan's hip, and Michael made that move he was so famous for in the NBA. It's called a ball swipe. You take the ball, and you get the momentum of the ball to knock your defender's arm away, and when your defender separates, you take off to the basket. Michael Jordan ball swipes. The defender, and I use the term lightly, he separated from Jordan, and when he did, he stepped on his own toe. He fell straight back to the ground. Michael Jordan, 1 dribble, 2 steps, thunderous dunk. Jordan pulled the ball out of the net, and as he walked by our fallen colleague, Michael Jordan chucked the ball on him. And he said, "Now you know what it's like to be spanked like a bad child." Michael Jordan loves to talk trash. It's an art form for Michael. I mean, I'll tell you, I've been around a lot of great trash talkers. I admire trash talking. But for Michael, I'm pretty sure that if Nike was not his major sponsor, Waste Management would be. He's that good with trash. Well, 2 guys later came yours truly. As I walked out there thinking to myself what my limited options might be, the only thing I decided I did not want to have happen that day was I didn't want Michael Jordan to dunk on me. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to step back. I am going to stay between Jordan and the basket no matter what he does. Actually, Duke's coach, Mike Krzyzewski, came up later and he said, "Jaeger, you were so far away from him, if you'd wanted to go out and guard him, you'd have had to take a cab." So Michael Jordan had the ball in his left hand, and with his right hand, he's calling me out. Michael Jordan looked at me and he said, "Are you really going to give me this shot?" And I looked back at the greatest player in history and I said, "I don't think you have it in you." Like I said, I love trash talking too. 100 old guys started laughing. Who's dumb enough to say something like that to Michael Jordan? George just shook me off with a wave of his hand, jumped up to take his shot, and missed. The ball went wide left, and clearly I had a head start to the ball. I actually got to the rebound. I took it back outside the three-point line like the rules stated, and Michael Jordan stepped out to guard me. As Jordan was stepping up, I looked back at him and I said, "Michael, aren't you going to return the favor?" As if I'd done him a favor by being such a horrible defender. Michael Jordan looked back at me and he said, "I know you don't have that shot in you." As Jordan stepped up, I stepped back, and from 26 feet became only the sixth player to ever score on Michael Jordan in this event. As I was saying, I'll be telling that story until they close my casket. And even on that day, I'll be trying to pry that sucker open and make sure everybody in the room knows, one moment, one shot, Michael Jordan was the second best player on the planet. All right, you might be asking yourself, we're talking about characteristics of greatness. Why would this guy open with that story? Well, the first reason is simple. Because I can. I mean, if you scored on Michael Jordan, wouldn't you open everything you do for the rest of your life with that story? And the second reason is really why adding this to your listening library has meaning, has true purpose. I've been blessed to have worked with some of the greatest champions of our lifetime. It did not matter if my interaction with them was for a newspaper story, a magazine piece, or a book. I have carved out a little piece of every interview I have done with amazing champions over the last 25 years to ask them about greatness. I'm fascinated by it. What allows some people to get to that top level and stay there? What are the things that take them from good to great and allow them to do what their peers and competitors can't? For the course of that time period, I kept a whole series of notebooks just about the greatness conversations, just about the lessons these amazing champions offered when I asked that question. If you believe as I do that success leaves great clues, well, that's what I wanted. I wanted their clues. Fascinating to me, it did not matter if the conversation was with Roger Federer or Roger Staubach, whether it was Mia Hamm or Serena Williams. It doesn't matter what generation, what race, what sport, what gender. The number one answer that comes up when you ask these amazing champions that question is that they say they found a time and a place in their lifetime when they learned to hate losing more than they love winning. They so expected to be successful, they so believed that it was part of what they were going to be, that frankly, it did not give them the joy. It didn't give them the thrill that it gives some people. Now failure, on the other hand, left a mark. If you could have been there to see a glimpse of Michael Jordan's face after I hit that shot, you might have a sense of what Michael had to say to me in that moment and over the next 2 days. Michael had a lot to say. Unfortunately, not much of it I can repeat. Michael was aggressive. He was occasionally foul. He kept coming back to this idea of a rematch, to which I said, "Dude, you had your shot." Now, as I said, this camp was 4 days long, and he does it every year as a charity event. He does it for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And over the course of these 4 days, Michael Jordan will raise more than $1.5 million for Make-A-Wish. Really pretty extraordinary. At the end of the event, he hosts a reception in a big ballroom. All the players are there with their spouse or their significant. All the coaches are there. Jordan's there. And if you're a player, your goal that night at some stage is to make your way to Michael. Thank him for the invitation. Just the opportunity to be there is pretty incredible. And then you want to hope you get invited back. My wife and I are there and we're making our way around the room. We're having a great time. And we end up about 25 feet away from Jordan when he sees me for the first time that night and he starts right away. And he doesn't care that my wife is with me. What he's saying, it's not nice. So we're walking toward him, and I was intrigued by why Michael Jordan cared, right? Why would he care? This is a single moment, and I mean, really, other than the thousands of people I'm going to tell this story to, who's even going to know what happened? So I'm walking towards him, and I did. I asked him, I said, "Mike," actually, as I was walking toward him, I realized I get to call him MJ, which is what you get to call him after you've used him like a dish rag. Anyway, we made our way over and I said, "MJ, seriously, I got it 2 days ago. It's kind of funny, but it's not as funny now." I said, "Why do you care?" And I'll promise you the next 30 minutes we spent with Michael Jordan is among the greatest time you'll ever spend inside the mind of a champion, understanding what it takes to think and act as they do. Michael Jordan said, "I don't do anything in my life to finish second. He said, it doesn't matter if it's the seventh game of the NBA Finals or a moment with a scrub like you. Thanks, Michael. He said, I do everything to finish first because I believe if you get to a place in your lifetime where you can excuse finishing second, where you can come up with a reason for finishing second, and you can become comfortable with that, you'll spend your lifetime there. And that's not going to be who I am. Michael, where does that come from? Where does one of the most competitive minds on the planet, where do you get that? He just loved it when you ask someone that kind of question, and Michael Jordan says, I know exactly when it started for me. He starts telling me a story. It's one I knew a little about, but not as much as he shared. He tells me a story about being 15 years old in Wilmington, North Carolina. He's trying out for his high school basketball varsity team. As it happens, that year, Michael Jordan stood 5'11". There's another sophomore trying out for the varsity who was 6'7". At the end of the tryouts, the coach knew he had only room for one sophomore on the varsity, and he decided to keep the 6'7 kid, and he cut Michael Jordan. Sent him home. Jordan's telling us his story. He's sitting at home, he says, and he starts crying. He was convinced that he was really the better player. He said that his mother came over, consoled him, wrapped her arms around him, did what a good mother does, offered him an excuse. And she said, Michael, one day you'll get it. The other guy was 6'7". Michael Jordan says this was his moment. This is when the switch flipped for him, when he realized what it was going to take for him to be successful over the long haul. He said he looked his mother in the eye, 15 years old, and said, Mom, we could spend the rest of our life coming up with an excuse for finishing second. I don't want to do that. He got up the next morning at 4 a.m., went outside to turn his dad's car headlights on so he could practice in the driveway, because he wanted one day to make that coach regret having made that decision. A couple of years ago, they inducted Jordan in the Hall of Fame, and when they did, they hailed him as the greatest player ever. They moved the ceremonies, gave him 300 tickets, told him to invite anybody he wanted, former teammates, family, friends. Michael Jordan said he had no problem giving away the first 299 seats, but he held out one until he could track down the 6'7" kid that beat him out for the team as a sophomore. He wanted that kid in the audience while he was on the stage, and actually from the stage, he asked the cameras to focus in on that player because he wanted to say thank you. He said, you know what? You became the first log on my fire. You taught me how much I had to hate failure. It would have been easy to make an excuse and just moved on in life. But I didn't want to be that. I did not want to make excuses a part of who I was. Michael Jordan said as we were sitting there talking, you know what? He said, a loss is not a failure until you make an excuse. Truly great ones understand that if you want to learn how to hate losing, you have to take excuses off the table. I challenge you to put the value of this lesson on your personal radar and never let excuses hinder your capacity for unlocking true greatness. Characteristic of greatness number one, it's personal. Hello again, champions. This is Don Yeager, and I want to thank you for diving headfirst into this career-long passion point of mine to truly identify the characteristics of greatness and what makes the great ones great. We've all been blessed over the course of our lifetime with moments that we'll never forget. The impact of that moment instantly shapes our perspective, shapes how we act and interact from that point on. Over the course of my life as a father of two, as a nationally acclaimed leadership speaker, as a writer for Sports Illustrated, and as an author of more than 24 books, 8 of which are New York Times bestsellers, I've had the honor of honest conversations, advice, and ongoing dialogues with some of the greatest winners, greatest leaders of all time. The lessons learned from these true champions have been distilled into 16 characteristics of greatness, with each consistent characteristic as an absolute, for me, and now for you. And what allowed these great champions to go from good to great. This next lesson is a game changer. Characteristic number 2 is rubbing elbows. It's pretty tough to do what I do, to talk about greatness in the world of sports, and not talk about a man known to some as the Wizard of Westwood. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people that don't know much about the iconic John Wooden because it's been nearly four decades since Coach Wooden last sat on the sideline for a college basketball game. But when he did coach, he was the greatest there ever was. Over the final 12 years that John Wooden was the head coach at UCLA, his teams won 10 national championships. 10 in 12 years. Unfortunately, in order to view Coach Wooden and his players in championship action, the pictures you might see are usually quite grainy. They're often in black and white, and the men that are in the pictures are always wearing shorts that are way too short. As a coach and a leader, he was the greatest there ever was. I had the unbelievable good fortune to have John Wooden as my mentor for the last 12 years of his life. We entered into a relationship as a result of a series of circumstances, and for 12 years, I flew to California every other month to spend a day and a half learning from Coach, and there isn't anything you couldn't learn from this guy. You want to talk about team building? You want to talk about leadership? Heck, you want to talk about love. This is a guy who married the only woman he ever kissed. She died 25 years ahead of him on the 21st day of the month. And every month, over the last 25 years of his life, on the 21st day, John Wooden got up and wrote his wife a love letter. There were boxes of these beautiful little love letters in his condo in California. There's just nothing you couldn't learn from John Wooden. Several years ago, as I'm leaving Sports Illustrated to start this new career, I was all excited about the idea of being a keynote speaker on greatness. I actually built the first version of a bookmark that displays all 16 characteristics of greatness and a quick blurb on what each characteristic meant. I was so sure that everybody I knew needed one of these bookmarks that I actually had 5,000 of them printed. A little cocky. 5,000. These things are coming into my office in waves, and it happens that one of the first boxes arrives on a day that I'm scheduled to go to California for a mentoring session with Coach. I grab a few out of the box, and I thought, how cool is this? I'm going to give my first bookmark to one of the greatest men I'll ever meet, John Wooden. I made my way to California, and I walked through the door of his condo, and I said, Coach, all the lessons you've tried to teach me, all the things you've tried to share, I've boiled them down to 16 sentences. Coach, I'd really love your feedback. What I really wanted was John Wooden's stamp of approval. I wanted him to say, well done. Now, Coach Wooden was big on celebration. And that night, we were going to go out to celebrate his 96 and a half birthday. He argued that the first 5 years of your life, you celebrate every fraction, and for the last five of your first 100, you should do the same. And that night, we were going out for 96 and a half. I'm thinking, he's 96 and a half. I should offer to read this to him because the typeface was kind of small. I offered to do so, and he didn't like the suggestion at all. John Wooden grabbed the bookmark out of my hand. He held it out at arm's length in front of his face and started reading it himself. Hey, if at 96 and a half you're still reading, God bless you. Coach reads it top to bottom, turns it around, hands it back to me, and he said, Don, if you give these away, you'll be making a terrific mistake. Whoa, Coach, that's not what I came for. That's not where I thought this conversation was going to go. Coach, I spell checked it 15 times. What's the problem? He said, Don, you have one of these characteristics so completely out of place that if you don't change it, you should never give this bookmark away. Don, down here at number 13, you list that the truly great understand the value of association. They get that they're only as good as their inner circle. I said, Coach, you've talked a lot about that. He said, Don, I'm here to tell you that outside of hating to lose, this is the number two characteristic of every great champion I've been around. He said, if you don't move it from number 13 to number 2, you should never give your bookmark away. I said, Coach, you know how much I respect you. Do you mind if I make that change after I give away my first 5,000? John Wooden said, Don, you do what you want. I'm just offering you my advice. If I were to hand you one of these bookmarks today, you would notice that the number two characteristic of greatness listed is the fact that they value their associations. Those first 5,000 bookmarks have actually never left my office, though they are available on eBay, very inexpensively. Coach Wooden said, Don, if you want to understand a story, you want to know how important this is, let me tell you a story about one of the greatest players to ever play for me. And John Wooden knows I'm a basketball junkie. So when he tells me I'm going to get one of his greatest players, I'm thinking Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Walton, Marcus Johnson, Henry Bibby. He had 26 All-Americans who played for him in those last 12 years of his career. I'm thinking this is going to be awesome. Coach Wooden looks at me and he says, Don, do you know the story of Swin Nader? I said, Coach, are you serious? You're going to give me one of your greatest players and it's Swin Nader? I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find 10 people who know who Swin Nader is. And even then, there needs to be a 12-step program for those who do. Swin Nader, he says, yes, Don, you need to know his story. Swin was born in Holland, orphaned. 3.5 years old, he's adopted into a family in Southern California. By the time he's a junior in high school, Swin Nader stands 6'11" tall. Now, what do we expect out of our 6'11 juniors in high school? They got to go out for the basketball team, right? Swin goes out for the team, and he gets cut. Now, how bad do you have to be at 6'11 not to make a high school basketball team? He tries out again as a senior, and he gets cut again. He never plays a minute of high school basketball. But that doesn't matter to him, because basketball wasn't his American dream. His dream was that he wanted to own an auto mechanic shop. The way he was going to do it, he was going to go work for an auto mechanic for several years, learn the business, and then he was going to go out and start his own. 3 years later, Swin is working at this auto place, and on this day, he has no idea, but the car he is repairing belongs to the local community college basketball coach. Now, I had a chance to interview this coach. He's a very funny guy. He tells me a story, and he says, yes, on this day, I'm walking toward the bay where my car is being repaired, and I noticed that the man lying underneath my car had his head out of the right side and his feet out of the left side. He said, I know I'm a community college guy, but I knew anybody who had head and feet out of both sides of the car. Now, that was big. He goes and he pulls now 7-foot-tall Swin Nader out from under the car and starts talking about basketball. Swin said he had no interest. The coach said, young man, if you'll try it one more time, I'll pay for everything for the next 2 years at our university. Swin Nader didn't have much interest in basketball at the time, but Swin will tell you he's always been a huge fan of free. Swin loves free. So he accepted the offer, and he went to the community college, and by more than a half a head, he was the tallest kid on the team. Now, who knows why it happens later in life for some young people than others, but Swin Nader went from a kid who couldn't make his high school basketball team to developing decent enough skills to play on the community college level. In fact, after playing in community college for 2 years, he was ranked as one of the top 5 junior college centers in all of America. He was 7-foot-tall, nice, agile. He had good touch around the basket. All these big schools wanted him to come play his last 2 years at their university. Then his coach said, Swin, before you make that choice, would you let me make one phone call? Would you let me call John Wooden down at UCLA? Swin laughed, right? He will tell you his version of this was like, they need me, right? UCLA had just won their 5th consecutive national championship. He didn't see them needing him at all. But he listened to his community college coach, and Swin will tell you it was the greatest sales call he has ever heard. The coach called, and he got John Wooden on the line. He said, Coach Wooden, I'm looking at your roster for next year, and it would appear you have one scholarship available. John Wooden said, yes, sir, I do. He said, Coach Wooden, I've got your guy right here. Now, Coach Wooden's heard that 500 times before. John Wooden very politely said, well, why would that be? And the community college coach said, Coach Wooden, I'm looking at your roster for next year, and here's your problem. How about that? You're a community college coach calling a guy that just won 5 national championships, and you're starting out with, here's your problem. He said, Coach Wooden, here's your problem. Coming onto your roster next year is Bill Walton, and everybody knows that the second he walks on the court and starts playing varsity basketball, he's going to be one of the best 2 or 3 players in America. He is that good. And John Wooden said, well, thank you for your assessment of Bill's talent. He says, Coach Wooden, but here's your problem. Bill Walton is 6'11". The next biggest guy on your roster is only 6'7", which means that every day in practice, there will be no one who can push Bill Walton to develop, no one who can challenge him. There will be no one who can make him work to get better. You need my 7-foot guy to make your 6'11 guy get better every day in practice. And John Wooden got it. It's the value of association. We are better when we are in the company of better people. We are better when we are surrounded by people going to extraordinary places. Coach Wooden invited Swin down to the campus. This one tells this great story. He's sitting there in coach's office. He's all nervous. He says the coach Wooden walks in and says, young man, I'm here to offer you our last scholarship. Swin said his chest filled with pride. He was going to wear UCLA across his chest. He said then Coach Wooden reached over there and pricked that chest to make sure there wasn't too much ego. He said, young man, if you accept our offer, I'm going to promise you two things. The first is that if you come here, you will hardly ever play. How about that for a recruiting pitch, right? Come here and you hardly ever play. He said, because the guy in front of you is so good. Bill Walton is so good. I'm never intending to take him off the court if I don't have to. But, Coach Wooden said, the second thing I'll promise you is that if you come here, you're going to get the chance to compete against the best player in America every day. You'll be surrounded by the best coaches in America. If you have any talent inside of you, you will develop it in our company. If you walked in the corporate offices of Costco today up in Seattle and asked to speak to one of that company's vice presidents, out would walk 7-foot-tall Swin Nader, who would tell you that his life was ultimately changed when he accepted Coach Wooden's offer. He went to UCLA, and outside of wearing those short shorts, he hardly ever played. Over the course of the 3 years that he was there, he redshirted 1 year and he played for two. Swin Nader averaged 3 minutes per game on the court. That's it. He never played. But UCLA, during that time period, won 88 games in a row. A record that may never be touched in men's college basketball. 88 wins in a row. They played for three more national championships. And when all the NBA scouts came at the end, they all had one question for Bill Walton. Bill, you're going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. But we just want to know, who gave you your greatest game? Who was your toughest competition? The guy at Pepperdine? Was it the guy at Kansas? Bill Walton turned and pointed to the other end of the practice court at Swin Nader and said, for the last year, that has been my greatest competition. And that year, Swin Nader became the first player in the history of the NBA draft, selected in the first round of the draft, having never started a senior college basketball game. He played 13 years in the NBA and the ABA, played a couple more years in Europe, came back to become an American businessman, and is enormously successful. Swin Nader will tell you, I know I was brought to UCLA to make Bill Walton better. That's really what I was there for. But he said, by doing that, I got better too. John Wooden has since passed away, but if he were here with us today, he would want you to learn that lesson. He would tell you, you know what? The most important thing you can do, you want to study greatness, you want to study your opportunity for greatness, he would say, look at those people you have in your inner circle. Coach actually says, Don, I know you love my quotes. He said, but remember this one, you will never outperform your inner circle. Coach actually said, I know you love my quotes, Don, but remember this one, you will never outperform your inner circle. You want to know what your capacity for greatness is? What your opportunity to excel is? Look at the people you have around you in your personal life, in your professional life, because you will never outperform them. And Coach Wooden will tell you that your responsibility in your pursuit of greatness is to constantly be improving your inner circle. It's why opportunities like this CD exists. I hope that as you listen to this characteristic, some of you will do so with a drive to form a better inner circle. It's all about improving that circle. Coach got done with this entire lesson and he looked at me and he says, Don, you show me your friends and I will show you your future. Pretty powerful lesson from a then 96 and a half year old coach. One that I continue to employ today as I think about his great life. Now, I love many pictures of Coach Wooden, but there is one in particular of Coach, Bill Walton, and Swin Nader. The most beautiful man on the planet is standing between two trees who, again, are wearing shorts that are way too short. Right up until a month before Coach Wooden passed away at 99 and a half, these three men still met once a month, every month, at a little diner right in Southern California for breakfast because they knew they were better for having made each a part of their inner circle. Coach Wooden called it the second most important characteristic of any true great, the characteristic of rubbing elbows, the value of association. John Wooden said it, and I would never argue greatness with John Wooden. As I mentioned before, by taking the answers from the greatest winners of our generation, I've compiled 16 characteristics of greatness. 16 different lessons filled with impactful stories that can easily be the keys that unlock your greatness. Or for some, open a new door to greatness they hadn't already achieved. The best thing about seeking greatness is that it is available to all of us. It truly is if you are willing to do common things uncommonly well. We look at amazing athletes and think it's all about the physical aptitude, but greatness is truly about mental, emotional, spiritual discipline. The great winners in this ongoing conversation have all made it quite clear they also want to be part of a great team. They seek their own greatness, and they want to be part of something special, a great team, part of something bigger. Lastly, greatness requires proper nutrition. Not what you eat or drink, but what do you consume? What are you learning? The great ones know each day is an opportunity to get another step closer to greatness. They make a conscious effort to gain something that can enhance their personal life or their professional life. Think about it. What are you reading? What are you listening to? Proper nutrition can fuel your greatness. Thank you again for adding this to your listening library. I hope these first two characteristics of this audio series have been of value to you. I also encourage you to go be great every day.
This is Jerry Blair, and I want to thank you again for making this quarterly audio series a valued part of your personal and professional development. We hope you enjoyed part one from Don Yeager, and we look forward to bringing you more absolutes next quarter as it relates to the 16 characteristics of greatness and the lessons learned from true champions. Until then, I hope that you are inspired to continue unlocking your own greatness and turn your future from good to great. Once again, this is Jerry Blair. On behalf of Midland National Life Insurance Company, thank you for listening.